Hello, I want to talk about the Ford F-150 Lightning, a truck that Ford is no longer going to be making. But a few years ago, Ford made a bet that looked maybe to them like an obvious bet. Like maybe they did the focus groups and they found that there was all kinds of opportunities here. They would take the most popular vehicle in America and make it electric. And maybe this made sense. Trucks do have a lot of room for batteries. Buyers are used to higher prices in that segment. There's also like the electric torque, which I, as a person who drives a very small EV, is enjoyable. And then there's like onboard power. There's like the opportunity to charge your house when there's a power outage. These are like good truck owner things, right? And this was not meant to be like a niche experiment. The Lightning was supposed to show that electrification could upgrade America's most important vehicle. And that bet was wrong. But with most bets, there's nothing to learn. You think there are, all you gamblers out there, you think, oh, I should have bet on black instead of red. No, you shouldn't have bet at all. But with this bet, this is a bet on a strategy. And when you have a strategy that fails, turns out there's a great deal that you can learn. I think that the strategy Ford has coming out of this is a much better one, and I'm actually pretty excited about it. So, in short, I think that the Lightning was dumb, and I think that the failure of the Lightning will lead us to a better place. Let's get into it. Now, of course, it's very hard to separate this out from the single blunt force policy change of the Trump administration ending federal EV subsidies. Whatever you think about electric vehicles, this was like an astonishingly dumb move from an industrial strategy perspective. If the US just keeps changing its industrial policy every 2 years, not only is nothing going to get done, but in the future, companies will not respond to our industrial policy because they won't know if that's just going to go away before they're even done building the factories. Ford bet tens of billions of dollars on these subsidies staying in place, and with the swipe of Trump's Sharpie, Ford now has lost around $20 billion.
I will end the Biden inflation nightmare, and we will end it very quickly. I will stop Biden's trillions and trillions of dollars in wasteful spending and rapidly terminate the Green New Scam. It's one of the greatest scams in history.
If you wanted a textbook example of erratic industrial policy, not just slowing transitions, but destroying value, now you have one. And this was bad for all EVs for a lot of different reasons. But also, the Lightning was already struggling. When Ford announced the truck, 200,000 people pre-ordered Lightnings, but only around 40,000 sold in the first 2 years. Importantly, the same goal that Ford had with the Lightning was also had by GM with the EV Hummer and by Tesla with the Cybertruck. But there was a thing going on here, and a thing that to me did not make a lot of sense. So what you gotta understand is that trucks are not just vehicles. When people buy a truck, they're not just buying transportation, they're buying an idea, they're buying capabilities. People go to the dealership and they see what they're going to do. They imagine the future they're going to have with that truck. When you're looking at a new vehicle, you're imagining the future you will have with that vehicle. All the fun stuff, all the cool things, all the independence and the power.
And also potentially the ability to do your work better and to be seen as successful by people around you. This is part of why trucks have such high margins and why the F-150 has been the best-selling vehicle in America for decades.
Everybody, I think, can accept this. You're not just buying steel and rubber, you are buying identity, and that matters a great deal when you're trying to electrify them. So Ford and GM and Tesla all made this bet. They believed they could change the cultural meaning of EVs. And honestly, more power to you. This would be great if we could do it. These are the vehicles that burn the majority of the gasoline. It'd be great if we could electrify them. They wanted to change the culture that EVs aren't about like being efficient and quiet and sensible and like making compromises. EVs could be big and heavy and fast and tough and aggressive and American status symbols. Now, the Hummer and the Cybertruck are much more obvious examples of this, but the F-150 is a status symbol. It's not quite as in your face as a status symbol, though like you could certainly do things to make it clear that they are more of a status symbol. But the auto industry makes so much money off of these vehicles, they would love it if an electric vehicle version of something could be like an added value on top of that, so you'd spend even more money on these cars. Like, they don't want to sell small, boring cars with thin margins. They want to sell giant machines that scream power. I think of all of these companies, Ford was both the most ambitious and also had the best strategy. Because the F-150 is not just a status car. It is a working vehicle that can provide a lot of value depending on how you use it. Now, certainly, it can certainly also be a status car. I live in Montana. I see status F-150s all over the place. But the F-150 is less of a status vehicle and more of a cultural signal, like built Ford tough and all that. So I don't want to say that there's no strategy here. There was a strategy, and it might have worked, and if it had, it would have been great. But there were three things piling on top of each other, making it so that this was unlikely to work And I could see how you might not see it. And just so everybody understands, the F-150 is not like a Ford vehicle. It's the Ford vehicle. The F-Series is, I think, responsible for a third of Ford's profit. It's also Ford's cultural identity. It is like the thing that people think when they think Ford. Ford makes one car, the Mustang. Like, they are not a car company. They are a truck company. And if you're Jim Farley, and it's 2020, and you've just become the CEO of Ford, and you want to prove to investors and regulators and yourself that electrification will not hollow out your business, you don't start with like an EV Ford Escape. You start with the truck that pays for everything else at the company.
They are not a vanity project. There are no gimmicks. This is not for PR or for Wall Street. We built a truck so people can use it in their daily lives.
So at the time the Lightning was greenlit, maybe this logic wasn't crazy, but ultimately the Lightning was designed for a world where the future wasn't just electric, but like electric was aspirational and profitable and like culturally legible to truck buyers. Like, a thing that a truck person would want. And I'm sure that they did so many focus groups with truck owners, F-150 owners, and they told them all of the advantages and all of the disadvantages. And those truck owners said, yeah, no, that sounds dope. But there were these three things that held the car back from working. One of them is physics. The other two, probably even harder to fix than physics, which is saying something because physics is pretty constrained. But we're not going to start with physics. We're going to start with the one you're never going to guess. It is easy to miss the role of dealers in this story because they're mostly like, we don't understand what they are as consumers. Like, probably most people think that the dealership is run by Ford, but it's not. They're independent companies, but they are not just retailers. They're like political actors inside of the ecosystem of a car manufacturer. They hold a lot of sway over what succeeds and over what fails. Ford does not and cannot legally sell cars directly to customers. I am going to try and be chill about how I feel about dealerships being a negative force in America. I know that a lot of you work for dealerships. I'm sure a lot of people work for dealerships, and so it feels like they are valuable to you. Overall, I have a lot of problems with the model, but that's not what this video is about. So Ford sells cars to dealers. They then decide what to do. They decide how many to order. They decide how to market them. They decide how much inventory they want. They decide how enthusiastically they would like to explain the cars to buyers. And this is important with newer technology vehicles because people are going to have a lot of questions. And yes, there are real concerns that maybe dealers don't have all of the information of. Like, I know I have several times told a car dealer that I'm interested in electric vehicles, and they're like, no. And I assume, because I am a trusting person, that it isn't just greed that's pushing them in that direction. But very important to understand the business model of a car dealership, which is that they don't make much money on the initial sale. They make money on the financing, so they want you to spend more money than you have. That's huge for them. And their second biggest source of income is service, oil changes, and brake pad changes, and the kinds of things that EVs do less than gas cars, which is never something that they're going to tell you, because that's a huge part of how they make money. So dealers are extremely sensitive to anything that threatens those revenue streams. And in theory, the Lightning was supposed to try and win dealers over. So first, it was a high-ticket truck that was likely to lead to financing. And kind of that financing would be traded off for like the price of gas. So you could say, hey, you might have a higher payment, but you're going to spend less on gas, and that's going to even itself out. And then the dealer starts making the money that the oil company would be making. So maybe that would be a good thing. But also, Ford, and this is smart, they were like, what if we win dealerships over with like all of the accessories that come along with the F-150 Lightning? So you sell that truck, we make most of that money, but then you can make a bunch of money selling accessories. So basically trying to give dealers reasons why they want to sell the F-150 Lightning so they can make a bunch of money on it. But the people who own dealerships are going to be inherently conservative. They don't want the model to change because the model is working as it is, and anything that changes it is scary. And there's no like other system ready to like come in and be like, oh, I can figure out how to make money there because it's all protected by law. So I'm sure that to some extent dealerships had a hard time explaining these new cars. I think to some extent they didn't want to. They don't want to take that risk of like, how will this affect our bottom line when we're used to having our business be structured a certain way, and that is really reliant on service, which EVs have less of. And when they do, it's more complicated and takes more time. So the loss of service revenue was really scary. The ease with which you could point somebody to an easier to understand car was great. So I think for a lot of dealers, probably the Lightning felt like a risk without an upside. And they don't need to like protest to exert their influence. They just don't order the vehicles.
They just deprioritize them and they're like, oh, we still got inventory. We're not going to buy anymore. When enough dealers do that at once, the signal to Ford is like, this car is failing. And I don't understand like all the mechanics here, but I think that that is like a really important part of why this didn't work. But it is not the only part. Thing number two, electric trucks run into some unavoidable problems. So first, like weight and aerodynamics, a truck is already very heavy. It's got a bad aerodynamic profile for a bunch of different reasons, but in part because they want to make them look kind of aggressive. And that doesn't look aerodynamic, you know? The Prius is never going to look threatening. So when you make a big truck electric, you have to have an enormous battery just to get acceptable range. But that means a few different things. One, just a lot of battery material goes into one vehicle. So the F-150, like the battery is about twice the size of what goes into the Chevy Bolt. So you could make two Chevy Bolts with the battery material from one F-150 Lightning. Or you could make like five or eight F-150 Lightnings that are not fully electrics, but are extended range electric trucks, which I will explain later. But also that big battery pack. There is a certain amount of energy that can flow into a battery pack per minute, depending on how fast your fast charger is. So with a very big battery pack, even very fast charging is twice as long as if you have a battery pack half the size. So a Bolt, even if it has slower fast charging, is going to charge faster, because just like think of the battery as a tank, it takes longer to fill up a larger tank. So that's a thing, but that's mostly not a big deal. A bigger deal has to do with like what we imagine we're going to do with our trucks. And one of those things is towing. And towing is complicated with a Lightning. So when you're towing something, it's not just that you have less range, it's that you do not know what your range is going to be. Two trailers, even if they have the same weight, can have wildly different aerodynamic profiles. So like a box camper versus a boat, totally different range. And that's annoying. And this is also true of a gas truck, by the way, but it's a lot faster to fill up a gas tank than it is to charge at a fast charger. And there's another math reason why trucks are a harder thing to electrify first. EPA range numbers are based on a mix of city and highway driving. But if you're going fast enough for range to matter, most of the trip is going to be on the highway. And on the highway, speed is the dominant force for efficiency. Pushing a vehicle through air is basically the same as pushing it through water. Like, we don't see air as a thing, but it is thick and it is a fluid. Going a bit faster doesn't just make things a little harder, it makes them much harder. You're hitting more air every second and you're hitting that air harder. For a large truck, you're pushing a huge blunt wall of air out of the way, and so the penalty is even worse. If you lift that truck a little bit more, if you add accessories to that truck, all of that is taking away from your range as well. And at highway speeds, 75 or 80 miles an hour, the usable range of a big electric truck drops sharply. Trucks are simply a harder thing to electrify first. The energy costs are higher even when you're not towing. And because most of us don't have like a good mental model for how fast aerodynamic drag explodes with speed, the real world range ends up being less than what people expect and also less than what they have been told. And for clarity, this is less of a thing for smaller cars. But also for clarity, if you're worried about range, you should drive slower, which is the opposite of your intuition. And then there's like the third problem of like all of the things that I have just told to you are a bunch of information. This is like stuff that you don't have to know about if you just buy a regular F-150. Like, for example, I think that the average driver of a car has no idea that their range per unit of energy stored in the car, whether that's in gas or electricity, goes dramatically down at 85 miles an hour. So people go out there in electric vehicles, they're like, oh, my car has 300 mile range, and they're driving at 85 miles an hour, and they're like, I only got 250 miles. That's because aerodynamic drag, it increases with the square of your speed. So a little bit extra adds a lot to drag. But people don't know this, because we haven't had to know this for so long, because ever since we got really good gasoline infrastructure in America, we haven't had to worry about it. So we have dealers, we have physics, and now our third thing. So when you buy a car, anybody, this isn't like a truck thing, this isn't an F-150 thing, you are imagining what people are going to think of you when you are in that vehicle. Now, this obviously occurs on a spectrum. There are lots of people who buy F-150s entirely because they're a good work truck, so I'm not talking about that situation, but there's a lot of people who buy them because they want to signal something. There is a status component to that, certainly, but I think even bigger than that, there's just a cultural thing going on there. And the people who buy an F-150 as a cultural signifier are not generally also the kind of people who buy an EV as a cultural signifier, which, like, that's me. In part, I drive an EV because it's super convenient for me. I have to take it to the shop less. I don't gotta get oil changes. I don't have to go to the gas station anymore. This is great. I like that. But there's also a component of it that is cultural. I want to see more EVs on the road. I want people to see me driving my EV. I want them to ask me what I think of it so I can tell them that I like it. But somebody who is more culturally aligned with the F-150 brand, they're going to want something that feels more like mechanical and more fixable and more traditional. I don't think that this is something people will argue against. Even like friends of mine who I know who have trucks, they're not going to say like, no, Hank, it's evenly distributed among all kinds of people. No, like the average person who wants an F-150 is not the kind of person who wants to signal that they're the kind of person who would drive an EV. Culture is not rational. So the idea that like a $90,000 electric truck is going to flip the identity of truck buyers, that was a long shot. I think it was a pretty big miss. Now, maybe in a world that was like less polarized, maybe that would have happened. But we now signal our political perspective with pretty much every decision we make. And that cultural mix of an F-150 and an EV does not make a ton of sense. It's like those people whose like political ideologies like make sense but don't make sense. Like, I think that people should have guns to protect trans people. That's how I a little bit feel about the F-150 Lightning, where it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That sure. Maybe it's a matter of practicality, or maybe like, look, I live in Montana where I have a bunch of friends who are like super hardcore environmentalists who also like eat a lot of steak and shoot elk for fun. That doesn't make sense on the East Coast, but it does make sense out here. And so perhaps there was an idea that this could happen. Perhaps it could have happened, but it did not happen. I think that this is the hardest thing to do. For a company to lead culture almost always fails. It is so hard to do. You can ride the wave. You cannot build the wave. So Ford is retreating here. It makes sense to me that they're retreating. The plants that have been making batteries for the F-150 Lightning, they're going to be making batteries for like homes now, which is wild. Really big shift, really big loss. I think I saw that it was like a $20 billion write down. That's an absurd amount of money. So they made this call, but now to talk about what they're actually going to do about it, I have to talk about EREVs. I was an owner of the original Chevy Volt, which was the first extended range electric vehicle. Great car, very good car, and an amazing idea. And a kind of failure, as frustrating as this is to me, a kind of failure for like weird reasons. But an EREV, or extended range electric vehicle, is an electric vehicle where the electric vehicle motors are the things that are always turning the car's wheels. But then there's like a gas generator on board the car, which recharges the battery. So you have a battery that can maybe get you 30, 40 miles of range. When you run out of that range, the onboard generator kicks on, starts recharging the battery. This is good. Like, I like this so much. There is basically one reason why it is not good, and it is because people do not plug them in all the time. Oftentimes, they don't plug them in at all because they think it's a hybrid. They think it's a hybrid car and they're going to get the fuel efficiency savings, and they will get some, but they're going to get the fuel efficiency savings of just like the hybridness of it. But no, the real savings are when you charge it with a plug. So with an EREV, what do you get? You get your EV torque, you get daily EV driving, you get tremendous savings on gas costs, and you get lower emissions if you care about that kind of thing. But you also get towing without anxiety. You get refueling in minutes. You get 700 mile total range. You don't have to be dependent on rural fast charging. It's not perfect. And particularly, it's bad if people never plug them in. Like, you gotta plug these cars in. And it will save you so much money and hassle. You will be at the gas station way less often. And also, these generators are super simple compared to a car's engine. Now, you do, I think, still need to do oil changes. In fact, I know with my Volt, I had to do oil changes. There could be this problem where if you don't drive long enough range that the generator turns on for a long period of time, it has to turn itself on to like burn through the gasoline, because you can't have gasoline sit in a car infinitely. It will eventually get bad. I don't know how or why. But there's a couple of things that I think makes trucks a great platform for EREVs. One, it has the word rev in it. And I'm not fucking kidding. Like, Hemi? Like, they branded Hemi as like a thing. And I don't know what a Hemi is, but a Hemi became a thing, right? And people who buy trucks, they probably know what a Hemi is. But I know that Hemis are good and they make your truck powerful. So maybe there is an opportunity for EREV to be a cool-ish sounding thing that is actually about having your truck be better at being a truck. But that's not the only thing. Also, it spreads battery materials more efficiently. So I'm going to have this smaller battery, and I'm not going to use most of the battery all the time, but I'm going to use it sometimes, and that's going to be worth it. But if you have this giant battery that's used like twice as big, and you're carrying most of that battery around on days when you only drive 20 to 30 miles, that's bad. It's a bad use of resources. If you can split that 300-mile battery into 10 30-mile batteries, that's 10 electric trucks for every one electric truck. So that's part one of Ford's new strategy here that to me makes sense. I think that an EREV F-150 is a pretty big value add to the average truck driver. And also, you still put gas in it. Now, it's not going to like feel the same as driving an F-150. It's going to feel like driving an electric car most of the time. When the onboard generator kicks on, it doesn't sound like a cool truck sound. It's just a sort of constant hum of a generator running. And so maybe that's like a cultural thing that will be somewhat hard for people to get over. But if there's a bunch of working people who are like, I am getting this EREV because it makes my life easier. It makes my life better. It's like cheaper to own overall as a vehicle. So it's better for my business. Then I can see that transferring over. And like eventually, like culturally, people are like, oh, well, if a working man likes the EREV, then I like the EREV. Right? So that's part one of the new Ford strategy that I like. Part two of the new Ford strategy that I like is let's make the smaller cars EVs. And this is also GM's strategy right now. It seems like the Bolt is coming out in 2026. It's going to have a starting point under $30,000. But the value of an EV isn't really a work truck value. Like I see an EREV platform being very valuable for a work truck. The value for an EV is that they're great at just driving around and being a practical car. They are practical. They're quiet. They're cheap to operate. They're mechanically simple. They break down less. They need less service. You need to spend less time at the gas station. As long as you have a place to plug them in at home, EVs are better cars, and they're just going to keep getting cheaper. Tesla started out as a status play. They made this like very fancy electric car, and that made sense then. We have moved past that. This is not about cultural signifiers, not about status. It's about usefulness of cars. For most people, cars are about being simply useful. Now, we're also a little bit signaling. Like, some people don't want an orange car. A lot of people seem to want the same frickin' color car. But the path to EV dominance, and this is the path that we are on, is I don't think it is through proving that, like, an American truck can be American and tough and powerful and an electric vehicle. Like, this makes sense rationally. They're very powerful. They're extremely powerful. But we are in the culture that we are in. The path to EV dominance is instead practicality and usefulness and value delivered per dollar spent. And that is why the Chevy Bolt kicks ass. These are small cars, reasonable prices, fast charging. They fit in parking spaces. They make your life easier. I'm actually putting this on my 2026 bingo card right now. The Chevy Bolt is going to kill it. It's under $30,000. It's easy to live with. There's a bunch of people who have already driven them, who like them and will advocate for them, including me. They charge fast enough. They're cheap to run. If you could charge them at home, they will make your life much better. And when you're parked at the pickup line for your kid, you're not like churning out carcinogens from the back of your car. And eventually, buying a gas car will just feel kind of weird. Like, it won't be illegal. It won't be immoral. It's just going to be like, why would you do that? The people who actually use trucks for work will move to EREVs until like 10 years from now, when charging is super fast and the batteries are more power dense. They'll just like save the money with an EREV platform and get that extra torque, and it will be like good. And then there's going to be like a cultural signifier crowd that's going to burn gas for a while longer. But honestly, I think as like people who do the work move over to increasingly electrified platforms, not all at once like the Lightning was trying to do, but over time through with like an EREV intermediate, the people who are doing like a class signifier thing, who are doing a status thing, they will eventually move over as well. I feel like this is a kind of coherent vision of how we eventually don't have gas cars being sold in America. So in this segment, EVs fail. And I think in part because there is an element to the status object or the cultural signal of the big truck that is in itself hyper-consumptive. I think it would have been bad if the car companies had figured out a way to make EVs into a hyper-consumptive status object. It's not supposed to be that. EVs should be, listen to me, appliances. Your car should be like your dishwasher. It should be good if it does its job well, doesn't require you to think about it very much, and doesn't break. That's all it should be. That's what cars should be. That's the future we're headed for. And that is an EV future, because they're better at all of those things than gas cars are already. And this year is the year that they are the worst that they will ever be. If Jim Farley would like to come and chat with me, I'm into it. All right, and since people keep begging for it, let's do a little connections. Cook Data, Worf. Worf? Worf? There's only one Worf. It's Lieutenant Commander Worf. Labor, birth, and delivery. Those are all right next to each other, though, so that seems like a red herring. Peer, intelligence, education, go out, information, doc details, commerce, leftovers. Having a real problem with Worf here, you guys, because none of the rest of these people are in Star Trek. And none of them are Klingons. None of them are security officers. None of them are even people. It's a misspelling of Worf, the thing that goes into the ocean. Was there another one? Labor, birth, delivery. Was there another one? Well, no, delivery. You could get delivery or you could go out. Or you could use, or you could have leftovers. That's the red herring, everybody. Or you could cook. Those are your options. Those are your food options for the evening. That's all you got. You get a meal train. You could get it. If you had a baby, you can get a meal train. Then that is another way. Data, actually. No, Data is a person from Star Trek. I apologize. Data, Worf, and Doc? Doc is kind of a person from Star Trek. Is that a second red herring? Okay, so let's get these together. What I did see as I was doing that was energy, commerce, labor. So cabinet positions. Secretary of Intelligence? Is there a Secretary of Intelligence? I feel like there is. Secretary of Education. That's it. I don't think that there is a Secretary of Intelligence. There's a Secretary of War now. It was used to be Defense. And then Intelligence is under them. Information and data and intelligence are all the same thing. But what's the other one? Not Doc. Details? Yeah, give me the information. Give me the data. Give me the details. Give me the intelligence. Okay. All right. And then that leaves us with Doc, Peer, Worf, and Birth. Worf, what do you say with Worf? You say Lieutenant Commander Worf. You say Mr. Worf. Worf certificate, birth certificate, Worf, birth, Peer, Doc. Oh my God, it's homophones for like ocean stuff, for like things that boats connect to. A berth, B-E-R-T-H, oh, I love it. And a dock, D-O-C-K. Homophones for places to park a ship. Beautiful, I should have known, I had it. And then I think commerce, education, energy, and labor. Probably the next one. Leftovers, cook, go out, and delivery. Perfect reverse rainbow, everybody. The CEO of Ford just watched me play Connections. I'm gonna feel weird about that.